Successful people learn how to make their mind work for them. I'm David Nagel, and this is the Successful Mind Podcast.
Amber, thank you so much for doing this. How are you doing today?
I am great, David. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Why don't we start off by telling everybody what you do, what you're so amazing at?
Thank you. Yeah. So my superpower is really helping people find the heartbeat in their life, you know, their purpose, what they're here to do. And then I am really artful at helping them construct a brand and a business that supports that purpose and that mission, and really just a life that aligns with the whole thing.
So I'm going to ask you a question about branding, because I think that this is very interesting. It seems like as a business society or even a small business society that it has done a 180 on this idea, maybe in the past 10 or 12 years. I remember about 12 years ago, you know who Dan Kennedy is, right?
I don't actually.
You don't. So he's a very well-known copywriter, direct marketer. Like, he's been around for years. He was part of a Glazer Kennedy inner circle that ran for a long time. Anyway, Dan was saying about 12 years ago that branding was done. Like, we were done with branding, that it didn't work, especially for small businesses anymore, because a client allegiance, if you will, was pretty much out the door. But it seems today that everywhere you go, people have taken a much bigger turn on the idea of branding. What is your idea of branding, and how important is it for people going into business or that have small and medium-sized businesses to really be considering?
Yeah. I mean, I believe at its core, branding is our sacred opportunity to show up as who we really are, you know, in our truth and our purpose. And it's this beautiful little cocoon, if you will, that we get to sort of wrap ourselves and our ethos in, and we get to label it however we want to label it. And we get to invite people in to, you know, be part of it and to experience it. It's really like this continually evolving zone of opportunity. You know, it's an energetic attunement, if you will. Branding is just such a cool concept. And I think that, you know, we can think about, I just invite our listeners here to think about maybe a brand or two that you just really love, you know, like a company, but the brand, you know, like, how do you feel like you experience that brand? And I want you to think about some of the reasons why, and what that's really about. And it will, generally speaking, it'll always be feeling based. It might be results, but there's always a feeling that is generated from those results as well. So it's about helping people have an experience at its core.
So when you're talking about brand, you're talking about things like, we know very well, like Coca-Cola or McDonald's or
Apple, you know, yep.
Apple, things like that, right?
Yeah.
And they elicit some kind of an emotion or a feeling that we've associated with those brands over a period of time. Mm-hmm. And those are generally cultivated by the brand themselves, yes? Like, they're very right. Aware of what they want people to associate to their brand in order to buy and keep that in the forefront of their mind. When you are working with somebody on their brand, what do they need to be thinking about when they say, well, hey, you know, I have an idea for a brand? Is that just a good place to go, like whatever their heart's telling them? Or is there a process that you take people through to discover what is the best brand for what they want to accomplish?
Yeah, I think I would love to speak about personal branding here specifically, because I would imagine you probably have a lot of folks that are operating in that realm. And I get very excited about the opportunity to work with a personal brand, because what it really is about helping them come home to who they really are. You know, the reason we do the businesses that we do, the work that we do, David, is because we want to make a difference here, right? The work that we do on a daily basis is about sharing our heart's message and, you know, honestly, like our soul's calling.
Yeah.
And those are the clients that I serve as well. And so figuring out how to translate that into a digital brand experience for people to interface with can be really challenging for folks, especially who are not like in the work that maybe I do. You know, they're in the work of teaching teachers or their health coach or something like that. And this isn't necessarily like a natural strength for them. But it's reminding them, very simply put, to remember, you know, why do you want to do this in the first place? It's always bringing people back to why, and then helping them empower that why and mobilize that why into action. So what's the most effective way for you to make that impact? What's the most effective way for you to serve people in the way that only you can serve them? Create that transformation. And then we build out, you know, okay, what do those offerings look like? What feels inspiring to you? You know, when we fill in the blanks on color and copy and the way that they set up their business, you know, are you going to do straight one-to-one offerings? Are you going to create digital products? Are you going to have live events? Are you going to have a hybrid of all of that? You know, what's the most effective way for you to serve? And everybody has their own answers. I think that's the most important thing to note. I think that there's this notion that like all of the information is outside of us. But what I do is I help them tap into what's inside and I help them create something from that place because that's always what's going to be the most effective. That's always what's going to be the easiest thing for them to sell. And I bring them home to that.
So the more authentic they are with themselves and with what they're doing, the easier it is to kind of dial into that brand.
Yes.
Is what I hear you saying, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How much forward thinking do they need to have on this? Because there's a question that I get, you're like, well, what if my brand changes? Like if I do something this year, but it changes next year, does the brand change? Like, do I need to be thinking 20 years down the road? What's your idea on that?
You know, I think that we're all here for our own personal evolution projects. So your brand changing is 100% going to happen. I think like just knowing that that's going to be part of the process and part of the journey, it's going to evolve. And so there's two different things I want to speak to. The first is that, you know, when I began my business, I knew that I wanted to be this branding coach, this mindset coach. I knew that I wanted to work with people on tapping into their greatness and then helping them create something in the world that changed their reality, right? When I created my business, I went from being in a corporate job. I worked in collegiate athletics marketing and branding and corporate sales. I did that for a decade. And making that leap into owning my own business and working with entrepreneurs felt like a huge leap to make. Yeah. And I wasn't 100% confident in doing the mindset coaching stuff yet because I hadn't had a lot of specific proof of concept. I've been teaching students in the university. I had a lot of mindset work I was doing, but I wasn't labeling it as that quite yet. But I also knew how to design websites, how to write copy. I knew how to help people kind of get to the heartbeat, but I just didn't know how to put it into words yet. So I started working with branding clients. I positioned myself as a branding coach. And I designed their websites for them. And I was coaching them at the same time. I was building that muscle. I was getting better at my craft. And then at a certain point, I was able to phase out of the design aspect of things and just be straight in the mindset coaching and the business and the brand coaching and helping clients really get out of their own way to build something really successful. And I built, you know, online programs and events and have a podcast and all of those things. So I think it's important to know that you're going to go through your own sort of evolutionary process. You might be a personal trainer at first who's working with one-to-one clients and you're doing it in a brick and mortar building. And then you're transitioning to building an online business and you're now working with clients all over the world, you know, and building this online client suite. But that evolution is a guarantee. It's part of the process, I think, as entrepreneurs, as we scale our businesses and as we grow and we test things out along the way. So that's like the part one. Does that speak to that part of your question?
Yeah, it does. What I find interesting is when I think about well-known brands, I've always found it interesting how a brand like Apple, like you mentioned Apple.
Yeah.
I think Apple's a great example of this. Like Jobs had that vision in his mind from the very beginning. And even though the Apple didn't change, I think what Apple meant to people changed over time. And he was able to adapt to that and what his vision was as it grew. Is that what you find normally happens? Like, is it kind of in that type of a sequence? The more the personal growth is happening for the business owner, that they become more clear on the message and what they want it to mean to the end audience or the user.
100%. You know, I put a quote up the other day. It said, your strategies will only succeed at the level at which your mindset expands. So the level of consciousness at which we attempt a strategy or at a point in our business is the level at which the success of that strategy is going to happen. And the more conscious we become, the better we understand ourselves and our capacity for greatness, for impact, for our biggest vision. Because as you know, we start and we have separation there.
Yeah.
And so helping business owners get into that higher level and higher understanding of themselves is always what leads to their business's rapid success and growth.
What do you do when somebody's stuck in that place? Like they're stuck in their own growth. They may have a product or service. They know something they want to start, or they've already started it. Maybe they're making some money doing it. But they're having trouble seeing that vision forward for them, or what it actually means beyond, hey, I need to make money at this right now. What, how do you take them to the next level in their own evolution?
Yeah, I love that question so much. So I honestly go back in time. And we look at their personal timeline, because the reality is that we all have patterns of belief development from our thoughts and from our experiences. And what I find for my clients is that there are lots of stories and lots of parts of their narrative that are still keeping them stuck in their present day, whether it was a relationship with a loved one, a parent, maybe a basketball coach or something who said something that's just stuck in there. And when we bring their awareness to it, we're able to clear it. Because most of the time we don't realize how embedded some of these old beliefs are and how they're influencing us in present day, specifically as we're doing the most important thing we're wanting to do, which is grow, which is expand. So of course our biggest fears and doubts are going to come raging back in, and they're going to slow us down. So we go back in time to identify that, to illuminate it, as I like to bring them through a process of excavation, illumination, and then furthermore from there into the comprehension piece, so that they can take action. It's like that integration is really, really important, but we can't get there if we're not sure what actually is slowing us down.
Yeah. Do you come from the belief, like I do, that everybody has a purpose?
100%.
Do you think it's, like specific to the individual, like it's unique to, yes, to our own personality? So I was just talking to a gentleman earlier today. And he said to me, he's an attorney, and he's building an attorney business that actually helps empower entrepreneurs to go out and build their own businesses. And I asked him, I said, well, what is it that jazzes you in life? And he said, well, it's doing this. It's actually doing it. He said, but I don't know what my big vision is. I have no idea what it is. So we started talking, and I said, you know, let me ask you a question. Is there anybody in your life that would be upset in any way by your own massive growth? And he was kind of like, you know what? Nobody ever asked me that before, but I have a feeling you're on to something there. Yeah. How often do you see somebody stifling their growth based on somebody in their life who's not approving of what they're doing?
All the time. All the time. And I will tell you this, David, that very often that story isn't always even accurate, yet it's still activated within us.
Yeah.
And so, for example, I had a really significant breakthrough just in this last year with my mom. And, you know, my mom is one of those, if you ask me that question, whose love do you crave the most? It's one, hands down, my mom. All I wanted my whole life was just to feel like I was good enough, that my mom loved me unconditionally. And I honestly can say that I felt like I've been working for her love my whole life. And my mom, what we discovered this year, because we just had this huge breakthrough opportunity in our relationship. We sat down, we had this sort of like reckoning conversation, which I was totally ill prepared for, but her soul was like, we need to have this conversation right now. And I was like, oh, this is going down for real right now. Oh man. And we were in the front yard of my childhood home, like yelling at each other and crying. And we're like, but I just want you to love me. And she's like, but that's all I feel like I don't do anything right. And we're just like, meh. And then we're like, we just want the same thing. And like the whole time we had each had these stories in our heads that we weren't doing it right or enough for the other one. You know, just so, so healing, so beautiful, so mind-blowing. And we were both at the level of consciousness that we could have that conversation in our relationship. And it freed us in so many other aspects of our lives. And we sat down, and actually I asked her if she would be open to doing the Enneagram test. And she was like, I don't really want to do that, but if you'll ask me the questions, then I'll do it. And I'll tell you, that is an incredible, so if there's anybody in your life that you want to make amends with, or you want to, like, that you have an intimate relationship with, I mean, this is definitely for those of you guys listening that maybe have like mama drama, daddy issues, and you have a relationship in which you could do this. We sat down, and both my parents, I did this with at different times. We went through the list of all of the questions, and I asked every question, and they gave the yes or no answer. And at the end, you know, her result came up, and she was a 2 on the end. I couldn't believe it. All the dearest people in my life are my 2s. My mom is a two and she was the whole time.
Wow.
And which is the lover, like the person who's the helper. They just like love. When I was asking her all these questions, I'm an Enneagram three, all these questions about like success and achievement. She was like, nope, like none of those things mattered to her. Yet I always, the way I was trying to win her love was by succeeding and achieving things. And I thought that's what I needed to do. And I was wrong. My mom just wants me to be me. And it was incredibly healing. And so I think that I tell this story because I believe that many of us, we can only see through our own lens, you know, and we perceive people through that lens. And then sometimes we incriminate people through that lens. Like yeah. we create a story about them that's actually like a co-creative component in holding us back because we're afraid to step into our greatness. And I was doing that. And so I asked my mom, you know, for forgiveness and we made amends on it and it was a beautiful thing. And I feel so incredibly free as a result of that. That was a really important part in my soul's journey to do that work.
So how do you think, well, first of all, it's very interesting that you developed the belief that being successful was the way to get her love. And yeah. yet in some, like, so here's my question is, do you think that was communicated in some way that you misinterpreted? Or do you think that that was just your way of doing you?
Yeah, I honestly think it's the latter.
Your way of doing you.
I think it. Yeah, I think I really do think that. And when I look back on the stories now with this new understanding, with a higher perspective, right? I have a higher view on it now in my own understanding of myself and my mom. I realize that, you know, my parents said to me growing up, if you guys want to play sports, you need to be on the honor roll. And I was like, oh yeah, well, I'm going to be on the high honor roll. Like I set that goal within myself. And then somehow I felt like I had to do that. And if I didn't, I was failing. But I'm the one who set that goal. Nobody right. told me I had to be on the high honor roll. It's just kind of how I'm wired. And there's plenty of reasons why, you know, if I can look at my personal story, being a survivor of childhood sexual abuse, testifying against my abuser at 5 years old,
yeah,
just all of that, right? That was like, if I'm just perfect, if I just nail the landing, if I win all the trophies, then A, I don't have to deal with my emotions, you know, and B, then I'll be good enough, right? Like sure. I learned that early and I certainly did get some feedback, but I also think it was really of my own creation and I would like show the trophies. And of course, what are you going to say when your kid wins a trophy? Like, great job, babe, you know, awesome. I don't think that there was the awareness per se to say like, you don't have to win the trophy in order for me to love you. I don't think that that was necessarily communicated, but I do believe that it was true.
And your parents understood the Enneagrams once you explained it to them.
They did. Yes. They did.
Could you explain it for our audience? Cause I know I have some people that are probably going, what the hell's an Enneagram? Where do I find it?
Yeah. So it's spelled Enneagram. That's one of those things that I'm a visual person. So spelling for you guys, you can Google that. you can take, just type in Enneagram free test and you can go on and you can get your number. And essentially there are 9 different personality types on the spectrum. And you land anywhere in there, you'll have like a wing. So, you know, I'm a 3 with a wing 2. So I'm the achiever, but I have that helper or lover wing, which of course, that's why my mom and I are so connected. And it just will give you some insights into you, into your personality. I mean, it's very similar to the, you know, Myers-Briggs and you have your own personality type there. You know, yeah, it's just a tool, you know, it's not an end all be all, but I will say it's pretty consistent with the people in my life when I know what their number is, that there's a lot, it illuminates a lot because you get to understand how to like what their biggest block is. And right. of course I work with a ton of 3s, because we're like attracts like, so
yep.
I work with many, many achievers and it's really helpful because I believe we teach what we need to develop. And so I'm always working on my own worthiness stuff. I'm always working on reaching the higher level of like where that is for me. And of course, I'm having others who are earlier on their journey and I'm helping them navigate that as well. And I know that road. I've walked that road. So I'm really well equipped to serve them.
So this is really great information for a person who will do that work. And if they have parents or whoever it is that they're having trouble with, will also do that work. What do you do with people where they have somebody in their life who won't? They're just totally convinced that the experience they're having is being caused by you being obsessive about your business or you wanted to become wealthy or, you know, you're putting yourself first, mm-hmm. you're selfish and you're hurting me because of it. What do you say to that? Mm-hmm. What do you advise people?
Yeah. So you're saying like that partner, that person believes that about your client, like the person we're talking about that's listening right now.
Yes, correct.
Yeah. It's really tricky. You know, it's really tricky because at the end of the day, we're all here for our own soul journey. We all, you know, and also you have a soul contract with that person in one way or another. They're here to help you get your lesson, no matter what that happens to be. So I invite you to look at it from that perspective. But just know you cannot manually change a person.
Yeah.
Can't change them. You can have an evolution in your understanding of them. And this is why I really love looking back in people's stories to understand, like, why would you be then triggering that in that person? Like, why would they be then having that reaction to you? It has everything to do with their own understanding of the world, of their life, of their own personal story. So at the end of the day, they're seeing you through a mirror and you're triggering something from them that they're not certain how to navigate. So I always go to the place of compassion, you know, like more love, more compassion, more understanding, seeing them as a small child, because at the end of the day, we are all small. We're all kids, you know, here in these grown up bodies, but at the end of the day, like still just wanting what we wanted as a kid.
Right.
And that's playing out right in this scenario. So it's multi-dimensional. But I think that releasing yourself from the need to change them is number one. Like you can't. Number two, having more compassion to understand why they are in that space and what's going on for them. Two, and number three is supporting them in just opening the conversation. You know, like maybe just opening it in a loving conversation around like, what is this really about? Like, I'm not fighting in this, because fight only creates more of that tension, right? Yes. Like attracts like, we already talked about that. So you gotta, how do you come to it to diffuse it? And it's going to be an individual experience every single time. I wasn't sure what my mom was going to do that day. She said, we need to talk. Yeah. She came with her arms like this. I was terrified. The little girl in me was like, oh, I'm dead.
Yeah. You were six again.
I was six and I was dead, like right there on the front lawn. But I knew I had to be brave and I had to go into it. And fortunately we were at a more evolved place than when I was six.
Yeah, that is very fortunate. That's really wonderful for you. I've had some people where the parents won't budge, and I've told them very much the same as you have, you know, like, how are you showing up to this? And here's the other thing. Let's just say we're talking about somebody's mother. Yeah. If your mother changed, you wouldn't have to grow. She's part of your story. She's Amen. Part of your journey. She needs to play that role so you'll grow into the woman that you need to be or the man that you need to be.
That's right.
And you want her to change so you're not uncomfortable.
That's right.
You know?
That's 100% spot on. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That is pretty cool. Because I don't think, I've always been in the philosophy that the universe doesn't hold anything back. The universe is clear. Right? Oh, it's human beings that are confused.
It's the truth. It is the truth. We get our little wires crossed. And when we get our point of focus on wanting to please someone who needs to go do their own work, right? Like we're trying to win the approval of another human. We're really missing the mark. And right. I think the other thing that's really important to say here, though, again, everything that I say comes with just so much compassion. I say to people, devotion doesn't happen without discipline. Guys, you know, radical personal responsibility is it. Like you need to step into your own leadership of self if you want to create any change on your path. And also like, I love you. You're doing a great job. We can do this. You matter. Your dreams matter. Like the mom in me comes out, right?
Yeah.
But I lost my train of thought on that one. I forget where I was going with that because I just got really into my wanting to hug you all through the podcast. It'll come back. It'll come back. We'll keep rolling.
Well, I think that it's kind of like a person has to ask themselves, really think about this for a minute. Who has the authority in your mind? Did the authority transfer ever happen in your life where you became the authority of your own life? Or does mom still have it, or dad, or the minister, or the fourth grade teacher? Like, who is it that has the authority in your brain that's telling you what you can do and what you can't do? And have you moved away from a place where you no longer need permission to want what you want, to do what you want to do, to think the way that you want to think? Or are you still coming from a place where you need that permission from that authority figure?
It's so good. That's right. And that is the thing that stops people dead in their tracks. They're asking someone for permission who doesn't have the authority to give you permission to live your life. It's yours. It's your curriculum. But We aren't taught that. Like, that was not part of my, like, nope. The humans were not disseminating that or reflecting that to me, really. I mean, maybe some were in ways that were felt dysfunctional. And I wasn't able to perceive it quite that way. But in my present day, one of the biggest, I'm writing a book literally about worthiness right now, because specifically for women, it is a, it's a thing that women are working for worthy. And I know some men are as well. It's a theme with the women that I serve. They're working to prove that they're good enough of, like, the life that they're already living.
Yes.
And of their soul's calling, of what they're here to actually do. And it's ironic because as I've been writing this book, it's been exceptionally hard. And I sit there laughing to myself saying, isn't it hilarious that you're writing about a book about worthiness and you don't feel worthy all the time when you're writing it?
Yeah.
Isn't that perfect how it's created that way? Because this is the work that I'm here and I'm blessed enough to get to do. And so it's been really fun to look at the themes that are playing out around this topic.
Absolutely. There's a fascinating, you know, I always like to look at nature, like, does this exist in nature? Because nature uninterrupted by human beings is pretty perfect. There's a documentary on moose from Alberta, Canada. And they did this study because apparently they have because of global warming, they've got this issue up there where the ticks aren't dying off. And they're literally, they're sucking all the blood out of the moose up there. So it's decimating the moose population. So they follow this moose around, and they're called ghost moose, by the way, because they're just so thin and so anemic, they just drop over dead. But they follow this moose around. It's actually a healthy moose, and it's a mama moose, and she's got a baby moose. And they show the whole story, like, the moose gets pregnant and then it has a baby, and then they take you through the year that she's raising this moose. And the whole year, she's super protective over baby moose and teaching baby moose what to do and all this stuff. Once her cycle comes back around to reproduce, she kicks baby moose out. And they show baby moose keeps trying to come back, and she runs away from it. And she chases it off. Like, it at that point, it's like you're on your own. You've learned enough. Yeah. You either make it or you don't. But I need to go reproduce and have another baby moose. And literally that's what it was. And I was thinking to myself, that is not something that parents do. Like, no. We're always hanging on to the kid. You know, do you need help? And it's like their experience of survival happens by them going out and failing. Allowing themselves to pick themselves back up and do it again and do it again and do it again and build that internal muscle and belief and confidence in themselves. And so many parents don't actually do that because, I mean, human beings are with parents longer than any other species. So it's supposed to happen gradually over a period of time. But so many people, again, and this ties into the worthiness thing, especially for women, they self-identify through the idea that they have a child. The child becomes their entire world, and it's not. And it's almost like, I don't know what I would do if I didn't have this child. That's what I identify with now, is through these children or whatever. But it's not their whole world. So it's a fascinating, I'm grateful that you're writing the book. I think it's great.
And I think to add on to that piece, we see that so many parents project their unresolved issues onto their kids. And I mean, that's not a new theme, right? That we see that, but this audience is a group of really conscious, visionary business owners and world changers. And I think this is an invitation for you to look at that, you know, like, where are you kind of overcompensating in your parenthood? And I can candidly share that, you know, one of the number one reason I wanted to leave my corporate career to launch my business, there were two. The first though was I wanted to be present for the life that I was living and for the people in it, including myself, because my corporate job had me working, you know, 40 to sometimes 80 hours a week when I was working events and nights and weekends and all these things. And I felt like I was always leaving and I was never where I wanted to be. I was never getting to sit down and do my writing, the things that really spoke to my soul as I had evolved along my own journey at that point. The second was I wanted to be home with my daughter. I wanted to witness the moments that I couldn't get back. You know, you don't get a replay on first steps and first words and all of those things. And I'll be damned if I was going to miss that. And so I left my corporate career and launched my business. I also had a huge vision for the business that I wanted to create. I wanted to create a multi-million dollar company. I wanted to do that while raising my daughter. I wanted to help my husband retire from his police career. We would make that choice as a family and give him more options to do the things he wanted to do, which we've done. And I just wanted to be in my life and in my gift and serving and helping people in a profound way. But I found that, you know, so Ani's 6.5 years old now, and I left my corporate career when she was 9 months old, and I was doing the naptime hustle for those first couple of years of the business. Like, that's literally the only time I had to work. Ben was on the night shift or in the day, you know, and I was like, she's down, game on. I'm coaching people, like watching on the monitor, like, don't wake up, don't wake up, don't wake up. Yeah. Right. And I built this really successful business from scratch, zero followers, zero subscribers. Like, who the heck is Amber Lillestrøm? Right. I had this corporate job and I came into this space and I built this thing from the bottom up to where we are today with a multi-million dollar company. And, I found even recently these moments when Ani would be home, guilt, like I should be with her right now. When I was working, like when I had it blocked in, I had my work schedule developed and I was having split energy and feeling guilty still because I felt like I needed to go be with Ani. And I had to really look at that and acknowledge, like, where is this coming from? What is this? It's not about her. She's good. Like, she's rock solid. But little Amber, if we go back in the books, right? If we look at little Amber's journey, well, my mom was a super successful photographer. She had a studio, she had a company she built, and this was back in the 80s. So think about that, right? There was no internet. My mom built this really successful business. She was representing commercial photographers and getting and like having them go out on jobs and all these things. And she was published in Powder Magazine and she was a baller. I mean, my mom was like doing the thing.
That's cool.
Yeah. And then I was in childcare with an extended family member and I was sexually abused. And my mom, without question, sold her business, gave the whole thing up, basically never picked her camera up again, and was then home with me and my brother until we were older, you know, in school. And that left an imprint for me, you know? And of course, so when I became a mom, I thought I was going to just keep working, even though I had my dream of my business. The second my daughter came into the world, and mind you, I had a near-death experience that was also the universe's way and my gift to myself to say, like, it's time, girlfriend, go do the thing. But it's no surprise that I was in this place of saying, there's no way I'm having my child in childcare. Of course, my mama bear came out. My little Amber had some fear there, of course, like the concentration of those two things together.
Right.
And I have had to really look at that and go, where is this coming up? You know, like when you were a little kid and you felt like a burden because you told the truth about what happened to you and then what subsequently occurred in the family, you know, my mom's whole family stopped talking to us. They sided with my abuser. My mom lost her mother and all these people, they abandoned us. And I learned early, this is the important part of why I'm able to help people with this. I learned early that when I speak my truth, people get hurt. I created that story.
Wow.
So I've had to really work at unpacking that, releasing myself from that, identifying the places where that's come up, you know, as I'm expanding in my business, as I'm using the microphone to tell my story, as I'm pushing myself to write the stories in this book. And I think that, you know, it's a process. It's a process to get there. But I think identifying the way your upbringing and your story is playing out in the way that you are parenting is incredibly important. And extremely freeing, not only for us, but for our kids. So we don't inflict upon them this overprotective shield and shell for a reality that's not actually theirs. It's our projection of what we overcame and what we survived through.
Right. That's absolutely amazing. And that little piece that you put in there about the family splitting up, I've known some families where there was kids that were sexually abused and then the parents found out and then there was a huge split in the family because of the denial of the abuse. And it's really, really unfortunate.
Yeah.
You don't hear people talk much about that, but it really kind of made a ring in my mind when you mentioned that. So mm-hmm. Sorry you had to go through that, but that's
it's part of the curriculum. It
is. Yep. It definitely is. So, well, I think for people that are going to listen to this, first of all, if anybody's listening to this and you know a mother that could use to listen to this, please pass it along because mm-hmm. what you've done is absolutely astounding. And hearing how you built it, you know, when your child was napping and stuff, like people need to hear that, you know, because you didn't make excuses why you couldn't do it. You found reasons why you could and ways why you could. You built it in the you know, the moments of the day where you had very little free time, but you made it as productive as possible and you were patient, you know?
You
did it and you held on to that vision. So I think that's absolutely fantastic. It's just another, it's another proof that a person follows their heart. They do the work, they make the decision, you know, and great for your husband for being on board with you with it. I hope he's doing great with what he wants. Like that's, it's just a fantastic story. Like, going to change a lot of lives. It's
changing thank you. It is. It is. And I think, you know, for those that are listening to this, you know, we're so much more alike than we are different. And what has guided me through all of it is just this unwavering commitment to the big vision. And I will tell you that one of the greatest gifts of the adversity that I experienced as a really young child, two things. Number one, I mean, my mom says to me, you know, you were 3 years old and you were able to communicate that this happened. Most 3 year olds don't have that capacity, but you did. And I mean, I was literally in court as a 4 year old, as a 5 year old, telling my story. I mean, my daughter's six. I can't even imagine seeing her stand in a courtroom. I remember it as vividly as if it were yesterday. I remember standing there, I remember hearing the folks say to my mom, she's getting older. She's not going to remember. I heard them doubting me and doubting my story and speaking that over me, but I just stayed steadfast. And my mom would always say to me, like, Amber, this is about courage. And that was a virtue that was just implanted in me at a really young age. And I knew that I needed to speak my truth. I needed to close the loop on this. And my mom stood behind me, my dad too, but my mom, I remember the most, like with me at therapy, taking me to group, you know, like all these things.
Right.
But I had this other voice that spoke to me, which I believe was God, spirit, the universe, speaking to me and saying, this didn't happen to you for nothing. And you're here to share your story. And you're here to, and I remember having deep empathy for the other children in my little group therapy class and thinking they had way worse things happen to them than what I did. And I just remember feeling such like love for them as a little kid. And I remember also feeling, my mom taught me so early, David, that hurt people hurt people. And I released and I forgave my abuser. Then I just somehow knew I didn't need to hold him in bondage because I knew in a way I would be doing the same to myself. And I knew I was here to do more. And I saw visions of myself writing books and speaking and helping people when I was like five. And I couldn't understand it back then. I was like, okay, you know, playing my Barbies, like, okay, that's weird. But it never left me. And so then when I had my near-death experience and I was on that operating room table, unable to breathe, when on the day of my daughter's birth, I saw that vision again. And I was reminded in that moment that I wasn't doing it, that I literally wasn't doing it yet. And I knew it, like I had the vision my whole life and I wasn't doing it. And so I invite our listeners to think about, you know, like what has been that little whisper in your heart, your soul, your mind that belongs uniquely to you? What's that little snapshot, that little vision? What would happen if you gave yourself permission to just go look at it today, draw it out, dream it out, write it on the page, illuminate it for yourself, spend some time with it today, play with it. You don't have to make a whole business plan, but just give it some oxygen to breathe today and imagine what it could blossom into if you gave it your whole heart eventually when you're ready to do that and some courage and some energy. It's absolutely world shifting what can happen when we step into that greatness and that truth.
Yeah. And don't be stubborn like Amber and me and have both. We have to have a near-death experience to wake up to it because I went through the same thing.
Exactly.
That's the universe is going to keep nudging you until you wake up, right?
That's right. So we just really needed a dramatic awakening,
yes,
David.
Yes, yes. There's drama there for sure. No question about it. Okay. This was phenomenal. What would be a successful mind tip that you could leave everybody with?
I want you to remember the mantra that if the dream is in you, it is for you. It is not a mistake. Mm-hmm. I want you to remember that. Take that with you. Your dream, David and I have big dreams, but we don't have the same dream.
Right.
Nobody has the same dream that you do, no matter what. Like the nuances, they'll never be the same, which to me is just proof that every single one of our dreams matters and we are here to bring them to life. If the dream is in you, it's for you.
That's beautiful.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for being on the show. I mean, it was magical. It was really great. Everybody's going to love it. Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Take care.